Welcome to Ad Exchanger Talks, the podcast devoted to examining the issues and trends in advertising and marketing technology that matter most to you.
This episode is brought to you by Nielsen. With consumers spending more than a quarter of total TV time streaming, it's more important than ever to validate your media plan and prove ROI. Your audience is spending time in new channels. Are you? Visit nielsen.com/streaming to get the tools you need to implement effective cross-media strategies. Audience is everything.
Καλώς ήρθατε.
That's welcome in Greek. I'm Allison Schiff, and this week on AdExchanger Talks, we have Tasso Argyros, CEO and founder of the customer data platform ActionIQ. Tasso, who comes from Greece, founded ActionIQ in 2014 after selling his previous company, Aster Data, to Teradata. The CDP market is crowded, and there's still some confusion among marketers about the category and its denizens. According to Tasso, some of that confusion is because technology analysts covering the CDP space haven't done enough to take a strong position and help marketers understand. Tasso also has a few strong words for competitors who haven't helped by muddying the waters with some unclear positioning. We'll talk about that, and also a recent survey conducted by ActionIQ that had some surprising, or more so alarming, findings, like the fact most businesses think they're doing a great job managing customer experience, but just ask their customers, and it's a very different story. Let's get into it.
Tasso, welcome to the podcast.
Great to be here, Allison. Thank you for having me.
So I live in Astoria, Queens, which is a New York City neighborhood, for those who don't know, that is known for having a very vibrant Greek community. You are Greek. And I speak no Greek. And I thought maybe you could teach me a handy phrase that I could use at the Greek restaurant that is almost literally across the street from my apartment if I wanted to impress people.
That's a great question. So let's see, what would you want like to tell them? Maybe you would like...
Thank you. I mean, it's so basic, but yes, that might be a little delightful.
Thank you is a great word. It's a hard one. The way you say thank you in Greek is ευχαριστώ, it's almost like ευχα and ριστώ.
Ευχαριστώ.
Very good. Very good, Allison. That's great. I think they're going to give you an extra piece of moussaka if you tell them that.
Excellent. Well, how do you say customer data platform in Greek?
You don't. You just say customer data platform in English. Because the Greek language gave so many words to English. These days, English are giving a lot of words to Greek as well. So it's a two-way exchange.
It's actually quite beautiful.
It is. It's great how globalization is bringing everything closer together.
So you have been a big data guy for a lot of years, I think pretty much your entire career. So just for listeners who don't know, you founded Aster Data, which was later acquired by Teradata, and then you spent some time over there before starting ActionIQ. So we'll talk a little bit about ActionIQ in a second, but what about databases and big data and making sense of big data just clearly does it for you?
Yeah. So I've always been a database guy. The way, as you said, I'm from Greece. The way I came to the US, I went to Stanford to start a PhD in databases. And I didn't finish because I started my database company. But what I liked about databases is that there is a very applied aspect of it and a very theoretical aspect of it. So believe it or not, if you're in academia and you study databases, there's a lot of math involved with figuring out how to process data at scale. But then there's a lot of very practical work that's required to make that happen and make it work at scale. So I love the combination of the theoretical and the applied together in the same field. You know, pure math didn't cut it for me. And then, you know, pure applied didn't either. So I fell in love with the discipline, I should say. And I've been, you know, trying to make it work in the real world, I guess, ever since then.
Pure math doesn't do it for me either, but that's because I'm incapable of it.
It's very tight, like very taxing. It's very tight. My dad is a mathematician, and it takes a tremendous amount of commitment to get through some of the hard problems. So, databases are a fascinating field.
So math kind of runs in the family a little bit.
It does. In some way, shape, or form, our whole family deals with that. But if you think about math like everything else, right, it's just a tool. You can use it to do a lot of great things. You know, I love to apply to solve data problems. That's kind of what my passion is.
So let's talk about Action IQ, the customer data platform market. And we've talked about this. I have with other, CDP executives and CEOs, just about the fact that it is still a very crowded field. And it's almost a cliche at this point to make that point and to talk about, you know, how you would go to the CDP Institute website and go to the directory and just scroll and scroll and scroll. So, you know, with that in mind, what makes you guys, you know, different, considering there's a lot of competition from independent CDPs and then also from the marketing clouds, which suck up a lot of the mind share among marketers?
Yes, of course. It's true indeed that CDP is a very noisy category. At the same time, whenever we talk to prospects or we're in an RFP, we don't see that many people, and we tend to see the same people over and over again. I think part of the confusion is that CDP is like saying database, right? There are many, many databases out there. And, you know, even if you think about the databases, you know, some of the most well-known ones, right? There's databases like Teradata and Oracle, and then there are things like Snowflake, and then there are things like MongoDB, right? There's so many database technologies. At the same time, if you know what problem you're trying to solve, then usually there's only one or two database choices that are right for you. So what I want to say by that is that, you know, there's CDP right now has come to mean a few different things. But then if you look kind of the subcategories under CDP, things become a lot more clear, right? I think the number one step for people to understand what is a CDP and do they need one is to understand how the space is divided, right? What do the different categories of players trying to do? I think if you ask me what makes us different and what do we do, we have, our roots are in data, obviously, right? I think we're the only company in the space where the founders come actually from the database space and have experience with large scale data management. And so we can handle data scale and complexity better than any other CDP out there. But beyond that, we have the most complete CDP solution because we go from data and identity to helping do self-service audiencing, analytics, modeling, journeys, and even real-time. There's a lot of CDPs that are doing one or the other, but there's value in being able to have more of a full stack, what we call the CX hub, the customer experience hub. And the final thing I would say about Action IQ, without going into too much depth, is that we're proud to have some of the, you know, best customer logos, I think, in the industry. So, you know, we work across industries with enterprises, right? We're very focused on the enterprise space. And we go from financial services with, you know, we have clients like Morgan Stanley, M&T Bank, to groceries like Albertsons and retail, to DocuSign, and, you know, several in the publishing space as well, like News Corp and the New York Times. So we have proven that we can solve some of the biggest, most ambitious CDP problems and deliver value beyond, you know, a single industry or a handful of companies. So that gives a lot of confidence to our prospects about working with us. And I know it's more like of, you know, it's more of an outcome, right? I'm describing like what we can achieve, not how. We can talk about the how, but we're very proud about that.
Let's actually talk about the how, but first, do you feel like marketers by this point know why they need a CDP? I feel like there was a point maybe a year ago, maybe it was 2 years ago, time doesn't mean anything anymore to me because mm-hmm. I've been working from home and every day bleeds together. But at some point in the past couple of years, there was a sense that marketers just wanted a CDP because they'd heard that maybe they needed one, still weren't totally sure about the difference between a CDP and a DMP. I think that's pretty much been cleared up. But I feel like there was this point when marketers were just, I don't know, RFPing everybody in sight, didn't really know what they were trying to solve for. They just knew that they should kick the tires here. And I think that is sort of a problem because then, you know, you guys have to spend time answering a million questions being asked by companies that really aren't ready. And then they might actually, you know, contract with you or another CDP and then not get value out of it because they don't know what they're trying to achieve. I mean, do you feel like that has changed and marketers like kind of get what they're trying to solve and they come to you with like more specific requests?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right that this was happening and has been happening. From my perspective, I don't mind that at all because I see that like getting into an RFP, for example, right, with someone that doesn't quite know what they're looking for is an opportunity for us to educate and to see that as an investment in the future. Because my thesis is that every enterprise needs a CDP. Like I'm certain of that. But nobody is yet, you know, knows exactly what or what CDP they need or for what problems to solve. But my assumption is that over the next 5 years, the vast majority of enterprises will deploy one and will get a lot of value from one. But the road there may be a little bit bumpy, right, if you don't know what you're doing. So I'm actually happy to invest, you know, my resources, my company's resources to educate. And even if someone doesn't pull the trigger right now, I know they're going to come back a year from now, 2 years from now, because what we tell them will stick with them, right? And once they're in the right time, right place, they're going to come back to us. And I cannot tell you how many times this has happened, where someone we spoke to that did nothing came back 2 years ago, and after a very quick process, we ended up working together, or someone had an RFP, and maybe, you know, they wanted to play it safe, they went with the marketing cloud, and a year later, they're back, and now we're working together. It happens all the time, and it's kind of a characteristic of the stage of the market, right? It's still CDP is still a market in, you know, relatively early stage. Still, many people getting educated. Still, many of the early success stories are coming out. The thing I will say is that we're very good about working only where we can add value. And you can see that in our customer retention numbers, which are exceptionally high. We have, you know, absolutely top of the industry retention rates among our customers. Of course, you know, we like to think we have a great product. We invest a lot of money into building that product. We're extremely customer focused. All these things help. But retention starts with the sales process, right? If you sell the wrong thing to the wrong person, it's going to be 10 times as hard to retain them. Whereas if you're honest about what you can and cannot do, and you know the prospect decides to become a customer and work with you, most likely you're going to deliver a lot of value. And if one thing has changed, I would say over the past couple of years in reaction to what you just described, is that we're much more upfront and honest and say, this is what we do, this is what we don't do, this is why what we do is important and can add a ton of value. But if that's not what you're looking for right now, we can always come back later. And you know, prospects appreciate that, you know, and it, at the end of the day, it helps drive success for everyone.
And you mentioned before that when you're, you know, answering an RFP, a lot of the same companies, you know, come up. Maybe it's a small crop. I mean, excluding the marketing clouds, who crops up? Like, who are you kind of in a pool with or being bucketed with, fairly or unfairly?
Yeah, I think maybe it's a good way to answer that is by explaining a little bit the different buckets of CDPs, right, or types of CDPs. So, you know, you have, first of all, there's some people when they say CDP, they mean a data lake with customer data, which is not what we mean, right? But some people may take, you know, may say, oh, we already have a CDP, right? And then you dig into that and you realize it's more of a snowflake with customer data, right? So that's separate and we can talk about that. But when people try to build things in-house, they usually mean a customer data lake, which is great, right? It's great for us to have it there and it's important. But it's not, it's a very different product. There's very different things. When you talk about more of the more kind of the business focus CDPs, the application CDPs, there's a category of companies that have roots more in tag management or SDK management. And these are people like Segment or Tilium or Imparticle. And there's a term for those companies that some of them use, not all of them, which is called CDI or customer data infrastructure. And the way I think of these products is their main job is to be at the digital frontier, the digital edge, like the website or the mobile app, and then capture data there and in real time move it to other systems, including potentially Action IQ. So this is kind of what we call CDIs, and it should really be a separate category, and we could even partner with that category. Except I think historically Segment, you know, muddied the water a little bit when they were trying to get themselves acquired and they were saying, hey, we can do everything, we're everything, right? And they were saying we're CDI, we're CDP. And I think that created a lot of confusion, frankly. But, you know, what if you look at Action IQ and someone like a Segment, we're apples and oranges, right? We do very different things. And you probably need one or the other. And if you don't know which one you need, it's okay, right? We can talk about it. But if we find ourselves competing with them, then probably someone is doing something wrong. But this CDI category, I think, is, you know, a good chunk of what people hear and read and think about the CDPs. But it's different from, CDIs is different from what we call CX Hub, which is where Action IQ plays. And CX Hub is a place where, you know, you can access historical data, right? Not just real-time data, but also historical data. And you're really looking to do a lot of intelligence, a lot of audiencing, a lot of orchestration, which is not something that the CDIs can do well, and it's something that we can do very, very well. And there you have traditionally players like, you know, Lytics or Redpoint maybe. You know, it's companies that are, you know, kind of, they're more focused on that kind of core CX Hub component. And then you have companies that are either focused on one smaller piece, right? So you have solutions like Amperity, which at the end of the day, they're an identity solution, which we also do, right? But that's not the only thing that we do. But their companies, you know, if all you need to do is to do identity resolution, I think there are solutions that do just identity. You know, what I always say about that is, you know, you can focus only on your data, right, either with an identity solution or with a customer data lake. But then if you don't think how you're going to drive value out of that, you're going to find yourself playing catch-up, right? So I think there's always an interesting conversation there about you have to work on your data, but then you have to work on your data access and intelligence orchestration. Otherwise, you'll end up spending a lot of money and getting very little value out of it. But if you take these three categories, right? So you have kind of the customer data infrastructure, which have roots in tag management. You take identity solutions, and then you take the CX Hub, like Action IQ. You know, these are kind of three big buckets. And, you know, I think most customers, if they were educated on the different types of solutions, would probably know which one or two solutions the need, which are the highest priority ones. So that's what we do, right? So we go in, we educate on that, and, you know, with a lot more detail, obviously. And then we like to let the prospect decide where their needs are and what their priorities are.
Well, let me ask you one more question before we hit a break. But you were talking about Segment when they were looking to get acquired. They sort of muddied the waters where everything, it worked. But it reminds me of column that you wrote for us last year, I think it was, which made the point that the technology analysts, the Foresters and the Gartners covering CDPs haven't necessarily done enough to help really define and clarify the category for marketers, I guess in the way that you just did, laying out these three buckets. So by this point, I mean, have those analysts done their job, or do you feel like there's more work to be done in really defining the category, like after all this time?
Yeah, you know, Alison, I think there has been some progress made, right? You know, for example, we participated in the Forrester B2B CDP wave that came out recently. And that was great, right? It was great that Forrester did that. You know, it was, you know, they spoke to a bunch of companies and, you know, they created a wave. And, you know, it's not perfect, but it's a great start. But we're still not seeing the big ones, right, like the Forrester and the Gartners coming out and putting in the resource and the effort to really clear the waters and say, here's the two or three subcategories of CDPs. And within each one, here's kind of who are the leaders. We have seen some smaller players. You know, there's groups like Real Story and others being a lot more aggressive in helping the market with that, right? Because there's a lot of demand in the market for clarity here, which we welcome, right? Like a confusing market doesn't help anybody. And the market is so huge that we're happy to focus on what we're best at. So the smaller players have done more. The bigger players right now, I think what's going to happen there is that they're going to start pulling CDPs into some pre-existing market categories, because the reality is that the CDPs can do a lot of things that traditionally were broken down to different groups, right, or the different markets or market segments. For example, you know, journeys, right, journey orchestration is something historically was a separate set of companies, but the CDPs like us increasingly do that, and we do it better than the traditional tools because we can bring a lot more data to the journey. Or, you know, real-time activations, right, is something that we can do very well, and we can combine it with historical data activation in a way that the pure-play real-time activation vendors could never do. So, you know, right now what it looks like is the different parts of the capabilities of the CDP are going to be evaluated separately from some of the bigger analysts. But I think we're probably still a year or two away before Forrester and Gartner come out and say, here's what's happening, here's the real players, and here's the real categories, and we're going to rank them in their own, you know, subcategories. That's not happening yet.
Well, that'll be a fun day. So maybe in about a year.
I agree.
So we're gonna take a quick sponsor break, but when we're back, we're gonna talk a little bit about some research that you guys at Action IQ recently conducted, looking at the state of customer experience. And I also have a question for you about the role DMPs will play in future, just considering everything that's happening in the world. So listeners, stick with us.
I'm Sarah Sluice, executive editor of AdExchanger, and I'm here with our sponsor, Elizabeth Sampson, and VP of Business Development at Nielsen. It's no secret that the way people consume content is changing. And it's happening quickly. Time spent streaming, for example, has increased 150% since the beginning of 2020, according to Nielsen, likely due to COVID. So, Elizabeth, What does this mean for advertisers and agencies?
You're absolutely right, Sarah. We're seeing dramatic shifts in media consumption at record speed. Now almost 30% of total TV time is spent streaming, and in the last week of December 2021 alone, audiences streamed 183 billion minutes. But of course, with anything new, there are challenges that come along with it. For example, advertisers are tasked with building brand equity to drive sales. To do that, they have to make sure they're reaching the right audience. However, audiences are increasingly fragmented, with the average U.S. adult subscribing to several different streaming services. So determining how to best distribute ad budgets across channels is more challenging than ever, with higher CPMs and marketing budgets that are already tight. Ultimately, advertisers may find that streaming allows for the scale of linear with the precision of digital, which is really unique.
Nielsen releases weekly reports that profile the top 10 streaming shows. From these reports, what are some of the audience insights you found surprising?
There's so much, but I'll cover two points that we found particularly surprising. First, we've seen an unanticipated rise in the popularity of international programs among U.S. viewers, like the hit Korean series Squid Game. It was the second most streamed Netflix original show of the year and made the Nielsen top 10 lists across genders, age groups, and ethnicities. Second, our data shows that it's incredibly important to understand audience evolution, especially when a linear TV show is made available on a streaming platform. For instance, Seinfeld's move to Netflix attracted a surprisingly young audience. Today, 80% of Seinfeld's streaming viewers are under the age of 50, many of whom weren't even alive when the show first premiered on broadcast TV. These are just a couple of examples. However, we've seen both of these trends replicated across numerous programs and streaming providers.
So finally, what exciting developments can we look forward to in 2022 and beyond?
Great question, Sarah. As the linear TV and digital worlds collide, the need for comparable measurement across channels is increasingly critical. We're currently developing a product called Nielsen One, a cross-platform measurement solution that will deliver a single, deduplicated number across screens. With our growing coverage of the streaming ecosystem, advertisers can understand which marketing channels best reach their target audience. Delivering true reach and frequency across all media is paramount to reduce advertising waste, improve the viewing experience, and enable publishers to make informed content and marketing decisions.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thanks so much, Sarah.
Okay, and we are back. So I want to start by, before we get into the customer experience research that I talked about before the break, I want to talk a little bit about data security and also, you know, privacy as reasons why people want to use a CDP. We often write about the advertiser perceptions reports on the CDP market. We also write about their reports on SSPs and DSPs. But in the most recent CDP market report, data security was cited as one of the top criteria by marketers, that they're really focused on that as a primary reason for signing up with a CDP. So how important is data security as that as a reason? And are you seeing that personally?
Yes, so it's a great question. But before I answer, let me just say that I love the advertiser perception report. And in fact, I believe in the most recent one, they ranked all the CDP vendors. And we were ranked number one for customer satisfaction, which I'm extremely proud about, and that's from everyone in the market. So sorry for the plug, Alison, but I had to say that just because, you know, I started this company to make my customers successful. So I couldn't be more proud to rank at the very top of the list over independent and marketing clouds. But your question, you know, we do see a massive shift in the market. It's almost like a lot of things came together, right? So there's concerns that consumers have about data privacy that drive both technological change and legislation that essentially what it's doing at the end of the day, it's making customer acquisition a lot more inefficient. So it costs a lot more money to acquire a new customer, right, on the digital front at least, than it used to like 5 years ago. And that's, you know, again, a combination of legal technology, but also the fact that, you know, there's no free lunch anymore, right? I mean, there was a time where Facebook was still new and Instagram was still new. But now, like, these mediums are, like, maxed out from the perspective of you know, what does it cost to acquire a new customer? And when that happens, you know, businesses, right, they need to grow revenue and they need to make money and be profitable. I think most businesses, they look at customer acquisition as one bucket and then retention and lifetime values as the other bucket. And so when customer acquisition becomes very expensive, two things happen. One is you have budget that you cannot afford to spend anymore because it has a negative ROI on acquisition. So that money finds its way more in the retention lifetime value bucket. But the second thing that happens is that if acquisition gets more expensive, in order to drive positive ROI, you need a higher LTV, right? Because essentially, if you take LTV and you divide it by CAC, you get your ROI. So before you can spend more money on acquisition, you have to invest in growing lifetime value. And then as lifetime value grows, you can afford to spend more money on acquisition. So it's kind of a feedback loop, right? But acquisition has been, those budgets have been growing since the internet was created almost, right? Like in the 90s. And I feel like we've closed a 20-25 year cycle where more and more and more money were pouring into the acquisition bucket. And now, you know, it's going to shift in a cycle that's probably going to be pretty long. I'm not sure if it's going to be 25 years, but I think it's going to be at least 10, 15 years. Where brands are going to invest more money, more resources, more focus, building more capabilities to improve customer experience. And by improving customer experience, they're going to grow LTV, grow, you know, improve retention, do all of these things. So I think we're really kind of at the pivot point, and it's fascinating to be here. But the CDP is absolutely the platform that can help brands get there faster and can also can help them do it more economically by consolidating some things that were happening before in other platforms like DMPs with what needs to happen in the future to drive that lifetime value increase.
I mean, there absolutely is a direct connection between customer acquisition now and prices going up and really having to think more about customer experience and loyalty, because you want to be able to retain, satisfy, dare I say, even delight, you know, your customers. And, you know, data is definitely going to be, you know, the way you do that. It underpins everything. So let's talk a little bit about the recent survey that Action IQ just conducted. When did you guys run that survey? It was over the past couple of months and just released in February.
Exactly. Yeah. So it ran the last couple of months. And we had a pretty large sample in the many hundreds in the US and the UK. And essentially what we were trying to understand, because, you know, our mission is to help brands improve customer experience, which will bring improvements in loyalty, retention, lifetime value, right? But we think customer experience is key. As I mentioned before, we call our subcategory the CX hub, right? That's what Action IQ, that's what we do, right? I mean, we're part of the broader CDP, but really CX hub at the end of the day. And so we wanted to understand how much work there is to be done in improving CX, both from the perception of brands, what do brands think they need to do, or what's their gap, and what's the gap from the consumer point of view. So that was kind of the core thing we were trying to figure out.
Right. So one of the findings was a little unfortunate, or you might call it eye-opening, because you found a pretty significant disconnect between, you know, how highly businesses grade themselves. You know, they look in the mirror and they're like, we're doing great on their customer experience versus the scores that were coming in from customers, which that's the reality. So why do you think that is? Like, why does that disconnect exist? And like, as a business, once you're aware of it, what do you do about it?
Yeah. So the gap, you know, was fascinating to see in the numbers, right? I mean, we kind of expected it, but it's fascinating. So, you know, we found there was a 38% gap between how well brands think that they deliver customer experience and how well the consumer of those brands are perceiving the customer experience they're getting. So it's a huge gap, right? So brands, you know, they're in the low 60s in terms of thinking that they're doing well, and consumers' perceptions in the low 20s. So the gap is pretty massive, right? You could say. And I think, I mean, part of it is, you know, I mean, it's human nature, right? I mean, we all think we're above average drivers, right? Like 99% of drivers think they're above average. I'm not sure the number is 99, but yeah, it's pretty high. But, you know, the other part is it's hard to know, right? And it goes back to data. If something goes wrong, most brands don't even have the data and the analytical tools to know that something went wrong, right? So you're doing all these things. You think, you know, you're delivering a certain experience. And on the other hand, when it's not perceived well, right, you don't even know. And that kind of tells you how big the gap is, right? Because you have to, before you improve it, you first have to know. And why is that happening, right? It's happening because, for example, different aspects of the customer experience are managed by different platforms today internally, right? So there's probably like 20 or 30 different platforms that touch the same customer in an enterprise brand. And so it's hard to even know when two of these platforms collide, right? How are you going to know? You have to go and get data from two different platforms that are likely managed by two different teams. There's also research that shows that the totality of customer data, even if you have a customer data lake, you're still dealing with 15 to 20 data sources that comprise the plurality of customer data that you would need to look collectively in order to understand what is going on. So these are a lot of the problems that we can help solve, obviously, right? So it's very relevant to us. But the sad truth is people don't even know, right? Brands don't even know. I mean, this gap is not malicious, right? I mean, the brands are really trying to do the best they can. They have the best intentions. They're putting in, you know, resources and effort already. But knowing when something bad happens, let alone being in a position to address it and prioritize and personalize appropriately is really far right now for most brands.
So there's more work to do. And the research also found that the majority, so 55% of consumers say that data protection is very important to the customer experience, which I thought was pretty interesting, you know, in light of what you were talking about marketer motivations to, you know, work with the CDP at all. I mean, there are all these regulations going on and you have to be in compliance, but there's also a customer experience imperative. So it's something that marketers should definitely keep in mind. And also that 48%, so like nearly half of consumers say that when a brand respects their privacy, like that's very important to them and very important mm-hmm. to the customer experience mm-hmm. specifically. So marketers do talk a lot about privacy. I mean, privacy is a big part of my beat, and I know all the talking points, the customer at the center, and blah, blah, blah. But do you feel like marketers like really appreciate how central things like privacy and data protection are to how consumers view like their actual experience with their brand?
Yeah, I think they're starting to appreciate it. Honestly, I think what Apple did was a shock to many people, right? I mean, you know, they killed billions of market cap value, right? From places like Facebook. I mean, they really moved more aggressively than most marketers thought they would. And I think the reason is because, you know, I think it's a combination of some, you know, underestimating, I would say, both Apple's business model, right, which is a big part of this, obviously, but also how much consumers care, right? Even if their choices don't always show that, but consumers do care about those things a lot, and our research confirmed that. You know, what I find very interesting about the data privacy issue is that there's certain aspects of it that consumers don't like. And specifically what consumers don't like is their data changing hands under the table. At the opposite end, if a consumer offers some information or data to a brand, the expectation is almost 180 degrees, right? Then they expect the brand to know and remember that, right? It's almost as if, you know, if I tell you, Alison, the name of my children, right? The names of my children, and then you come back a month later and you're like, oh, how's Athena doing, right? I'd be like, oh, that's a nice remember, right? The name of my daughter. But then if I haven't told you that and you come to me and you say, hey, how's Athena doing? I'll probably find that pretty creepy. Right?
I would be creeped out. I'd creep myself out.
Right. So, you know, obviously you would never do that. But my point is that exactly the same statement, right, which is a form of personalization, right, can be perceived as extremely impressive and engaging or very creepy. And the difference is, did I offer that data to you? Did I offer that information? Did that information arise from one of our own interactions? Or did you get that under the table from someone else without my knowledge and consent? And so that to me presents a great opportunity, right? Because what that tells me is that why should you risk your relationship with the customers by either giving data to others or bringing data from others when you're probably not even leveraging everything you know about the customer from your own interactions, right? Which is very safe and the consumers demand it, right? It's not even that they're okay with it. They demand to use what have they bought from you, when, right? Why did something go wrong? Like all those things are things that you should remember, right? In quotes, remember in quotes, from a customer experience perspective with your customers, right, every time you interact with them. But that's a low-hanging fruit, right? There's still so much room, right? So much opportunity there remaining. It's something we can definitely help with. And it's completely legit. And it's not gray zone, right? It's completely legit. Then there's a gray zone, right? Which is like, what types of information should you exchange? When should you do it? How do you get consent? Which is an ongoing conversation. I think it's a very important conversation because that's also part of the solution long-term. But again, a lot of the things we're doing as a CX hub, it's not controversial. It's totally above the line. And there are things that can drastically improve customer experience, make brands a lot of money. And it's all positive.
So I want to close out by asking about data management platforms. I think a lot of people think of, whether this is reductive or not, but they think of CDPs as sort of the heir apparent to DMPs, and that, you know, DMPs are sort of over. But is there a role for DMPs to play, you know, considering everything that's happening with third-party identifiers and third-party signal loss, and what is that role?
Yeah, I think I'm not sure long-term there is, because the DMPs grew up in a world where two things were happening. One is that it was okay to do something just on one channel, right? So DMPs are fundamentally a single-channel solution. And the second thing is that DMPs grew up in a world where cookie was the currency of acquisition, right? It was like the dollar of advertising. And that currency went away, right? That currency disappeared. And on the single channel front, right, at this point, if you really care about customer experience, there shouldn't be anything you do where there's a decision taken on a single channel or only on a couple of channels, right? Everything you do, all decisions about customer experience should take into consideration everything that happens across every single channel, because there's always something that may conflict with something that you're doing. So I think, you know, we started to take over tasks, features, functions, workloads from DMPs. So it has started to happen, and I think it's going to happen more and more. And even if the cookies hadn't gone away, I think it would still happen, because there's this very strong force to centralize the customer experience decisions, right? Because at the end of the day, you have one customer that's interacting with your brand, and it doesn't matter which channel or which platform your customer is interacting with, you need to give them a consistent omnichannel experience. So I think even without the death of the cookie, eventually it would converge. But I think the death of the cookie has definitely accelerated that. And you know, the CDPs have, you know, they just have more data capabilities, and they're built for a more data rich, more omnichannel world. So they're better positioned to take over those functions.
What you're saying brings to mind something that Lisa Utschneider, the CEO of Integral Ad Science, said on stage at our event, Industry Preview. AdExchanger hosted an event in person, in real life, just a few days ago in New York City. And you know, she was talking about different things going on in the industry and how it really depends on how you look at them. For some, you know, like a shock to the market can be, you know, really a tailwind for somebody else. So, you know, your headwind is my tailwind in a way. And the acceleration of the death of third-party cookies is, you know, helpful, I guess, for certain technology providers, and definitely less so for others.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, listen, technology is about change, right? And change has winners and losers. So we shouldn't be surprised. But that being said, I think that even before, my personal opinion is that brands were paying almost too much attention, too much, and too many resources on acquisition. And I think from a consumer point of view and from a business point of view, this is a great transition. It's a net positive. Why is that? Is because, you know, I mean, it's if not paying enough attention to the customers that already engage with you just because you think you can bring on board a few more was never a healthy mentality. I'm not saying brands were doing that, right? I think great marketers always understood explicitly or implicitly the importance of driving lifetime value before they would drive acquisition efficiency. By the end of the day, you know, you have these consumers that trusted you, that tried your product, they came on your website, they went to your stores, they paid you money, right? And they interacted with you. And that should always be the number one focus of every brand, because that creates efficiencies that no short-term metric can measure, right? That's what builds long-term loyalty. That's what builds long-term success. At the same time, acquisition was always this thing that was very easy to measure, right? And you could throw more money in and get more customers on the other end. So it was always tempted, right? Like you were missing your numbers. Let's spend some more money, acquire some more customers. And that was not healthy, right? It was short-term thinking. Unfortunately, you know, the public markets, right, hold you accountable for quarterly results. That often drives some short-term thinking. So I think this shift is about not just about going from acquisition to retention or from acquisition to loyalty. It's also about going from thinking short-term, right, like quarterly, to thinking long-term. What's going to drive, what's going to make this customer stick around for years, right? Not just this quarter and next quarter, but you know, next year's, next 5 years, next decade. And that's very healthy, and that's great for the consumers. I think it's going to be great for the brands as well.
Well, Tasso, we are out of time, but I have one thing to say. You'll tell me if I'm saying it correctly. Efharisto,
very
for
good.
Being
very
on
good, Alison.
AdExchanger Talks.
I'm
Thank
very
you very
impressed.
Much.
It's a pleasure to talk with you always. Thank you very much.
This episode is brought to you by Nielsen. With consumers spending more than a quarter of total TV time streaming, it's more important than ever to validate your media plan and prove ROI. Your audience is spending time in new channels. Are you? Visit nielsen.com/streaming to get the tools you need to implement effective cross-media strategies. Audience is everything.